This is Mick Warhurst on ABC Radio.
Just going to play you something from Monty Python's The Meaning of Life.
I'll have six bottles of Chateau Latour 45 and a double Jeroboam of champagne.
There you go. You remember that scene? How could you ever forget the man who just could not stop eating? And then eventually I think he explodes. I think that's how it goes. I can't quite remember. I was looking through my fingers because it's so revolting. But it's about greed. It's about stuffing ourselves up to the eyeballs. And I want you to think about greed as I head into our next little bit here, because it seems even the oldest Greek myths have an ability to describe the most modern of woes. We can certainly learn a lot from mythology if we want to, and Professor Alistair Blanchard joins us today to apply the myth of, and if I say this incorrectly, please do correct me, Erisichthon, to an affliction that most of us can relate to, which is controlling our appetites. Welcome, Alistair.
Good afternoon. Lovely to be speaking to you.
Today you're going to apply the myth of Erisichthon to greed. Tell us about this character.
Well, look, you've chosen one of my favourite characters from Greek mythology, Erisichthon. It's just a wonderful story with this kind of fabulous kind of gothic overtone. So Erisichthon was a king of Thessaly, one of the sort of wild northern provinces of Greece. And he was greedy, a greedy king. He was greedy in terms of appetite, greedy in terms of wanting to promote himself. And so what he decided to do was he wanted to build the largest palace that Greece had ever seen, a kind of mega mansion to rival all mega mansions. And so for that, he needed timber. And so he cut down all the trees surrounding them. In particular, one beautiful sacred grove of trees that belonged to the goddess Demeter. Well, she wasn't going to allow this greedy king to cut down her trees. And so she cursed him. She said, you know, I will show you the consequences of your greed. And she cursed him with insatiable hunger. So he just couldn't stop eating and was never satisfied. Aww. And so he ate and ate and ate, and he ate all the things in his palace kitchens and kept on eating, and he had to sell all his goods and kept on eating and kept on eating. Eventually he's reduced to poverty with only him and his daughter left, and he sells her into slavery because, you know, he just needs more money to feed this appetite. And eventually, you know, she comes back, but he keeps on selling her into slavery until the point at which, you know, the only thing left for him to do is to eat his daughter, and he eats his daughter, and then there's nothing left but him, and he starts to eat himself until eventually he eats, literally eats himself up till all that is left is a pair of snapping jaws. It's a wonderful gothic story about greed.
That's a grim tale, that one.
Yes.
They all end that way, though, don't they?
Well, I was going to say, if you don't like Grimm, I'm afraid Greek myths aren't for you.
No, I'm pretty sure they're all like that. But how can we apply this myth, this, you know, I mean, this track just is singing to me right now. Yep. I want it all, and I want it now. That's kind of like us. How do we apply this to controlling our own
could have been Erisichthon's theme tune, absolutely. I mean, the thing about Erisichthon is that he's it's a story that's produced from a culture that has very little. You know, the ancient Greeks were not a rich culture. They weren't a culture that was had abundant food. Every kind of calorie they ate was and consumed was hard won. And so out of that culture came a real respect for, you know, our appetites, for not being too greedy. Because if you're greedy, someone else in your society has to suffer. And they were very conscious of the fact that greed comes at a cost, and it's borne by the other people in your community. And so they have all this obsession about telling stories about greedy people who come a cropper. I mean, Erisichthon is one, but you can list them. I mean, Midas, for example, the man who loved gold so much that the gods punish him by causing everything he turns to touch to gold. And of course, again, he turns his daughters. There always seems to be something about the poor old daughters who end up suffering in these Greek myths. And everything
so
is turned to gold.
I hadn't thought about that. What's the, they get the short end of the stick, don't they?
Yeah, well, yes, yeah. I mean, these ancient Greek families, you know, it's all about the man, and the poor old women end up suffering. But this focus on greed is really something that you see going all the way through their culture. One one of the goddesses that you feared most was the goddess of famine, the goddess called Limnos, and she would come in and she would ravish your crops. And this would have been a fairly common experience for the ancient Greeks. Every time we model the ancient economy, we see that probably about one in every 10 years would have probably had some sort of famine. So they really knew what hunger was like, and they really knew the consequences of not keeping a good look over your foodstuffs.
I am with Professor Alistair Blanchard from the School of Historical and Philosophical Inquiry. I love that title, Alistair. It's at the University of Queensland. There are a few themes going on here. Can we go through them when it comes to greed and Greek myths?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I suppose one of the things that really comes through strongly in the Eryxicthon myth in particular is this focus on the love of the environment and the respect that you should give to the environment, because it's the environment that will nurture you, that will provide you with all the goods that you need in life. And so when Eryxicthon destroys this grove of trees, which is described as one of those beautiful places, this bit of untouched wilderness where, pine and elm and apple tree and pear tree all grow together and golden water gushes through it. I mean, it's described as absolutely gorgeous, Eden, this utopia. When he cuts that down, what he does is he really takes an axe to the throat of Mother Earth. I mean, quite literally, Demeter, the goddess of the earth, is the one who's being attacked here. And the Greeks knew that, deforestation had consequences. The philosopher Plato, for example, describes in his work The Critias the consequences that the world that he was living in, the Attica, was suffering as a result of deforestation and soil erosion. So they really knew the importance of looking after the environment, of proper husbandry of the environment, in order to kind of achieve the best. So I think that's one of the big things. There's a very strong environmental theme that comes through in this myth. I mean, I think I was going to say the other thing is, of course, this focus on appetite and controlling your appetite. I mean, that's the other really important thing that we see there. And as I say, it's just such a common theme in myths. I mean, take, for example,
such
the crew
a common
of...
theme in my household on the weekend. Right.
Look, I've just been gorging, actually, on those shaped biscuits, so I kind of know this. It's very hard to stop once you start this.
So how do you take the lessons from a Greek myth and apply them to your own life, do you think?
Well, look, I think one of the good things about myths is, and one of the reasons why they've preserved for so long, is because I think they combine this sort of quality of insight, the sort of timelessness of the message, with all of this wonderful vivid imagery. I mean, these images just stick with you. I mean, think of Medusa with her snaky hair, or Icarus, the boy who wants to fly to touch the sun. I mean, these stories have always been interesting, applicable to us, and they're great for teaching with kids. I mean, kids just love Greek myths. I have a couple of nieces, and their favourite sort of bedtime story, although I don't know how they can sleep after half of them I tell them, but anyway, their favourite bedtime story are Greek myths. They just absolutely, absolutely love them. So I think Greek myth is just fantastic for communicating important ideas in a vivid way that you just never forget.
That's true. Well, with Eryxicthon, we have just left is chomping jaws. That's it.
It's this wonderful image of these snapping jaws, and this hunger is so strong that he can't even sleep. Even when he's sleeping, his jaws just never stop moving. It's an absolutely fantastic image.
Wow. What do you reckon the damage to society is when you allow everybody to indulge in their greed? We find ourselves at a moment where there are certain people who can indulge their greed.
Absolutely.
And a lot who can't. Is there something to be learned from the Greek myths about this?
Well, look, I think we're living in an absolutely extraordinary moment in human history where we can consume protein in a way that we have never been able to consume before. So that, if you go down the supermarket aisle and you see those protein shakes, you know, and you look at the density of protein. I mean, in order to have got that equivalent, you would have had to eat practically half a cow in the ancient world. So the way we're eating, the kinds of things we're eating are just totally historically unprecedented. But I think the message is still pretty pertinent. That is, you know, don't do things in excess. Moderate your behavior. I mean, we're seeing, you know, again, a global obesity crisis. We're seeing land degradation through the industrialization of agriculture. I mean, all these important aspects about the changing nature of the world. I think the Greeks have something to say to us about that.
I think you're right, Professor Alistair Blanchard. And we have been discussing Greek myths and how they might apply to our current day woes. And today we're talking about greed, eating everything we can see, which could apply to me. They were all about being balanced, the Greeks. And you mentioned diet. We see it in their diet and not doing things in excess. Can society learn something from this, do you think?
Yeah, look, I think that the Greeks were all about moderation. Everything in moderation, nothing in excess. And that was about diet, but it was also about all your other appetites as well. Not to be excessive in terms of, you know, pursuing the body beautiful, not to be obsessive about cutting your way off from society and just, you know, devoting yourself to the life of the mind. That in fact it was a balance between the body, the mind, not, you know, being obsessed about, you know, greater politics at the expense of your family, and likewise the reverse, not to be only interested in your family and not interested in the wider community. So these kinds of ideas of moderation, of being in the middle, I think are really important. And I think those images and those messages are still resonating with us today, because I think what the Greeks were really worried about was the individual who was only interested in themselves, the self-interested individual who wasn't prepared to think about the consequences of their action for the wider community, because that individual put your whole community at risk. You know, they were very into the family and into the wider society. And I think they would have found, you know, contemporary individualism very troubling.
Next time, Alistair, you're going to join us, and I'm very excited about this because I hear that you might apply mythology to the way that we treat strangers. What myth is the one you're going to do next, Alistair?
Well, it's one of the greatest epics of all time. It's Homer's Odyssey, which is essentially a story about refugees and the travails that refugees encounter and the correct and incorrect ways, according to the Greeks, that we should treat refugees.
Oh, fantastic. Look forward to it. Thank you so much for your time, Professor Alistair Blanchard.
Look, an absolute pleasure.
Alistair's from the School of Historical and Philosophical Inquiry at the University of Queensland.
Miff Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.